This is the Creative Sports Podcast.
My name is Justin Peterson, and joining me, Darius Thomas.
We have a special guest with us today, a cat. Definitely keeping that part in there. Oftentimes we hear the saying, it's not how or where you start, but the finish is what's important. Well, for today's guest, that couldn't be much closer to the truth. Kiara Cooper, now the director of video content for Cal Women's Basketball, not only took the road less traveled, she took a road that was almost never traveled. All right, Justin, are you on time? That is.
I'm good to go.
All right, let's go 47. That was terrible.
I was just going to say that sounded spot on my end. If that ain't it, I don't know what is.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the show. My name is Garrett Wright. I want to start out with a big thank you to APM Music for donating the tracks we use on this podcast. Also, a reminder that this podcast is an extension of the sports creative community on Slack. So if you're hearing this and not a member of that community yet, you should head over to sportscreativeslack.com and sign up for free.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Creative Sports Podcast. We have a very special guest with us today. We have Kiara Cooper, who is the director of video content for Cal Women's Basketball. Welcome, Kiara.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So you've been busy lately. Basketball season literally just ended, you know, about 72 hours ago from recording, and you were able to work the Final Four. But we will start with how you even got started in this insane industry to begin with.
Yes, it was a crazy ride. So if I start back in college, I played D3 basketball at a small D3 school in Georgia. Throughout my time there, I interned in the athletic department. I did a lot of different things. You know, if you've ever worked in D3, you do all the different jobs, and that goes from, you know, the AD to the interns or the work study students, which would include me. So I did facilities, I did SID work, compliance work, all the things. And then upon graduation, I got hired on as assistant basketball coach at that school, Covenant College. And again, working D3, you have a lot of hats. So I did a lot of game op stuff. And I did our social media stuff for the basketball team, as well as assistant coaching. So that was fun. And then that's where I really got into the creative content part. And that wasn't really like a thing as it is right now. So I was probably ahead of my time in that aspect of, like, you know, posting on social media, just creating graphics, doing little videos on my phone and things like that. And then I was able to get a grant at the NCAA for women and ethnic minority grant. And I ended up going to Houghton College, which is another D3 school. And again, working all of those different jobs, but then I landed in sports information. So I got really into that, and that was fun. And I was like, oh, I can really do this. And I really wanted to do it for women's basketball. And then I ended up going to the University of Idaho, which I had, I was an SID for women's basketball, women's volleyball, and men's and women's tennis. And I do not know how I got that job, because each one of those teams were championship teams. And I was like, well, someone's looking out for me. So that gave me the opportunity to work not only Division I, but just like championship caliber teams. And in that, I was able to kind of flex my creative like skills. We didn't have that department. So I was able to not only like write the stories and tell the stories through traditional SID work, but also through creative work. So I camped out in our video department. Like I asked who I would call a mentor, Tim Jackson. I asked him, I was like, teach me all the stuff that you know about video. And he did. I started making videos for women's basketball and tennis, interviews, hype videos, like all those different things. I was able to work with Tim at the Big Sky Football Media Day, and I learned about streaming because we streamed the whole thing. And that's where I kind of got my 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 interest in knowing that I was good at video. But then I end up going to University of Kansas as a SID for Kansas women's basketball and the tennis program, the women's tennis program there. And it was still traditional SID work, but then I started to kind of like, I wouldn't say like creative director, but just trying to like come up with a look and a feel for the women's basketball team. And was just always trying to figure out like how we can do better, like on the social end, and working with their graphic designer on staff for the women's basketball program, and also like the other graphic designers on staff for the whole department. And I like to call myself like a hybrid SID. So I was like that traditional one and that creative one, but I lean more towards creative. And then like for 6 months, I took a break from sports just to, and this was like during COVID. So just to see like what was out there creative wise, I had to kind of break from the SID work. So I ended up working at a church in Chicago where I was the digital media manager, which turned into a production manager, basically. So I did all of the video work, the graphics, social media, all the things. And then one of my friends from that NCAA grant that I worked at, we were in the same cohort, she called me once about a position at Cal, which was a graphic designer position. And I was like, I didn't want to do graphic design. So I was like, I'm good. And then maybe like 6 months later, she says, well, we just created a video position. Like, are you interested? And I was like, actually, I really am, because that's like what I want to do is video. So applied for that. You know, it's all about networking. So reached out to people who I knew that knew anyone in that program and just asked them like, hey, like, what can I do? How can I, you know, put myself at the top of the list for this job? And, you know, just network that way. And then it was between that Cal job and a job in one of the Ivy schools, which was a same position, but for the whole entire department. And I chose Cal. And that's basically my way up to Cal.
So I think this is definitely a first that we've had a basketball coach, someone with a basketball coaching background, and possibly, well, maybe we've had some SIDs, but talk about the period of time that you were, you know, bouncing from coach to being, you know, SID / content. What was going through your mind and kind of how were you determining what you wanted to do?
Yeah, so I forgot to mention, I also graduated with an art degree. So I was always in the arts. So I was always in the creative like mindset. My last internship at my college was in marketing. And all I did was create graphics for to promote our programs and like sporting events and things like that. I was always a person, people came to me to ask for stuff to create because they knew I had access to like the computers and all that stuff to do that. I was more interested in photography too. So I was always like in there. The reason, like, it wasn't my first choice to be a coach. Like that happened because my coach asked me and she was like, this is a good opportunity for you to get into sports. I was trying to get jobs in marketing. Like I was looking for that. And I knew it was hard to jump from a D3 to D1. I was like, okay, I just got to get my foot in the door somehow. I used to be a basketball player. I think I can be a good coach. And if not, at least like I'm getting that, you know, skill set. And I did that for 3 years. And what was going through my mind was, I don't know, at first I was like, oh, maybe I can do this coaching thing. Like maybe this can work, you know? And then like, as the years went on, I was like missing that creative like spark. Like the creativity is different in coaching. Like you have that creativity of like creating plays, you know, drills and all that stuff. And that just wasn't where my mind was. If you could think of it as a left and right brain, like function, like, I wasn't on that side of that brain. And then every time my coach asked me, like, I need something interesting for recruiting, or I need something interesting for, you know, our social media to promote this, I was like, I'm on top of that. Like, I knew, like, I had so much fun doing that. And then I just didn't think there was a position for me in athletics to do that other than SID work, because all I knew was D3. So Like, I didn't know that. And then I also, like, had some very bad advice from somebody who told me when I went to, I think it was one of the conventions, could be the NCAA convention or some programming I did at the NCAA. It was an administrator, and I just asked them, like, if I wanted to be a graphic designer or any kind of creative person, like, should I do that? Like, should I go for that route? And they said, no. It's like, as long as you want, like, if you want to be bored and just do one thing all the time, then yeah, go that route. But I suggest you do something else. And I was like, I listened to it. I thought, like, I'm like, cool, you work at a really big school. Maybe that is the case. Like, I don't want to be bored. Because, again, I come from the D3 world. I'm never bored. Like, I'm always doing something. And I was like, I don't want to just be sitting at the desk creating graphics or whatever it is. So that turned me off, and that made me go the SID route, because I knew I could do both. I would never be bored. I could do all these things. I can get to know players. I have access, as long as, you know, you're in good standing with the coaches and all those things. So I don't know. I was thinking about so many different things, but I think that's how I landed from coaching to SID, was that one advice that someone gave me, which I think is really bad advice. So
yeah, but in the end, it all worked out, right?
Yeah, that's awful advice. I'm curious. You mentioned you basically went coast to coast. You're Georgia, Idaho, Kansas, Chicago, Cal. I'm assuming you traveled a ton with those teams too. Is there a place that you enjoyed going, or you know, with all the different conferences that you would have been in? I'm curious where your favorite place is and where you would go back to visit based on all your travels.
That's a good question. So I would have to say I would go back. If you talk about, like, all the traveling that I've done, Spain and Croatia. I just literally, we went on a foreign tour last summer. And if you're going to talk about that, that's probably where I would go back. But if you're going to talk about colleges, like places, I really loved, and I think it's because I worked there, Kansas. Like, I love the atmosphere for basketball there. Like, probably my favorite basketball experience, like, out of any of, like, the schools that I've ever gone to. Like, obviously, I haven't gone to, like, a Duke game or anything like that to experience that. But for me, like, that Kansas atmosphere for the men's team is amazing. And the women's team just won the WNIT, and I think they got to experience a little bit of that, too, because they had a really big, like, sellout game. But if anyone ever gets a chance to go to Allen Fieldhouse for a basketball game, like, take that opportunity, because it's amazing. And then another, like, I'll pay second to that. I volunteered at Ivy Madness for the Ivy Schools conference championship, and it was at the Palestria. And that was probably a really cool experience for me. Just because it's, like, that historic building, and just, like, having all of those teams play and the pride that they have. That was really fun.
It's interesting to hear your backstory and the, you know, the bad advice that you got and wanting to go the SID route. I'm curious, in your role today, do you feel like that's paid off in a way because you understand a little bit more about people's roles and what they're doing and how everything fits together?
Yeah. I think not only, like, being at SID, but working in the D3 has taught me so much, because I've literally done everything in the athletic department you can think of. Like, you know, I've done game ops. I know how to run a football game, or a football game. I know how to run a baseball game, a soccer match, a volleyball match. Ask me to go set up a court, I'll do it. Like, I know how to do it. Becoming an SID helped me tell stories better. It helps me see how to tell a story better, how to help our student athletes with, like, media training, because I had to do that. So if our SID is not doing that or can't do that or not available to help our players navigate that, like, I can step in and do that. Or looking up stats, like, I can do that if need be. Different things like that. I think that I was able to get certain skill sets for each position that I've ever had that has helped me in the creative space, and also just, like, being on staff with the team. it's different than just being on staff with the athletic department. And just like being able to sympathize with the SID, but also sympathize with on staff side as well. And I feel like I always had good relationships with the SIDs that I've come across, just because I understand, you know, their jobs a little bit and how stressful it could be.
Let's jump in to your current role. Can you give us a little bit more of what your day-to-day looks like in this role with Cal Women's Basketball?
Yeah, so I'll reiterate that it's not boring. You don't get bored. my day-to-day role, I mean, like, it depends. Like, it depends on the season. Like, if I'm in season, my day-to-day is probably just, like, surviving and just getting, like, making sure I am getting the content out there that needs to get out there, making sure that the players that did well, they have content out there and people are knowing that they did well. It's organizing footage to make sure that it's safe. And when I say organize, I mean like putting them in different spots so I know it's there, so it doesn't get deleted or like corrupted or anything like that. My job kind of focuses twofold on social media and recruiting. So a lot of content creation for recruiting for our coaches to send to recruits, and a lot of planning. And I can't say it like goes day to day, it's week to week. So again, each day is different, but the weeks are the same. So say if we're in season for conference, I know that we have a game on Friday, Sunday, right? So on Monday, we're planning for the whole week, trying to figure out what we're doing, what kind of content we're getting out, what's the schedule looks like, and if we have any events or special things that are happening in the game to make sure that goes off really well. And then it also depends if we're traveling. So if we're traveling, I know that we're leaving Wednesday, so I need to make sure that we have like travel videos on deck, that we have photos on deck, that we have the equipment that we need before we travel. So it's a lot of like logistics in that first half of the week. And then in the second half, it's creating that content that you see on social media. And on game days, it's a long day. It's just preparing. Again, it's almost like being an SID. You're preparing for the event itself. My day usually doesn't start until after the game ends. It's pretty simple if I planned it all well. But then after the game, if we win, I'm probably up all night trying to get all this content out, making highlight. I usually make two highlight reels, one for recruiting and one for social. Recruiting first. If that takes me a long time, then I just do clips on social media. So it's just a lot of different moving parts. It can look different to each day. On the off season, I haven't really had an off season. Last season, like I said, we went overseas. So that was kind of like the summer was kind of weird. So this will be my first summer trying to figure out what we're going to do in the off season. So I can't really answer that just yet.
All good. It's interesting to hear you talk about recruiting and social media as not one and the same. How do you differentiate between the types of content that you're producing for recruiting versus what gets posted on your social media?
Yeah. So I lean heavily like on our assistant coaches on letting me know like what they need for recruiting. Again, our coaches don't want the content to be the same just because you wanted to make it be exclusive for those players. So a lot of it is personalized, customized for that athlete or those group of athletes, student athletes. Yeah, it just depends. Sometimes it can be like good luck on a game, or it can be a highlight reel that I can make for them and get it to them, or a highlight reel to show them like, this is how Cal women's basketball plays. Like, here you go. Try to imagine yourself like in this highlight reel type of thing. Or it's just like fun videos that like, even if I got off my phone of like, you know, our head coach doing something funny or if our assistant coach is doing something funny, we'll send those things. Or a lot of it too, I kind of help with our graphic designer as well. with creating content on that end, because that is a lot of volume to like send for one person to make. So wherever I can assist in that side of creative as well, I try to. Or if it's photos, I know this past week at the NCAA tournament was also the WBCA convention, and our head coach was speaking at a panel. So making sure I'm there to get content for her to put on her social media, because that's kind of recruiting as well. It can be like anything. It runs the gamut. But we never want it to look like what we post on social media, because our audience for social media is, yes, recruits, but it's also for fans. It's also for family, you know, alumni. So we're trying to capture a whole bunch of people. But for recruiting, we're trying to showcase, like, this is what it can be like for you if you're on the team. Or this is, like, can you make an impact for the team if you come here? And I think that's the difference.
So you only have two hands, but I imagine when you travel, it sounds like you have a bunch of different gear and equipment that you travel with, whether you have your phone out capturing stuff on social media, you're shooting photos, shooting video, capturing all sorts of different content. How do you decide what is the right medium that you're capturing something in? And have you ever had a moment where you go, oh, I wish I would have captured that as a photo or a video instead of whatever I did?
Yeah, so last year was probably hard because I was the only creative traveling. So at that moment, yes, I had a very difficult time like figuring out like photo or video, like, well, what should we utilize? And I think I landed on video first, because I feel like that's what our staff wanted a lot of at the time. And we could always get photos from, if it was in game, like I would always ask the SID or someone like, hey, like, could you like get us a couple of photos and be fine like that. But if it has to do with like fun stuff, last year was a little different because I had a different type of camera where I was able to shoot video. And so I had a mirrorless camera. I could shoot video and footage. So it was easily like switched, I guess. But I can't really answer like how I chose. Like, I don't know. Like, there was times where I was like, dang, that could have been better as a photo than a video, because it doesn't translate on video very well. And in that case, maybe this is a pro tip, I don't know, but if I did capture it on video and I shot it at a high res enough footage, I would just screen grab it and I would use that as a photo. Like, I feel like I did that a lot of times. Like, for an event, my coach was like, did you get any photos? And I was like, no, I didn't get any photos. I just did video. And he's like, dang, like, I wish I could have had some photos. I'm like, okay, one second, let me troubleshoot this. I was like, I shot this in 4K. We should be good. I can color grade it real quick. And I shot her over like 10 photos, and it was just like 10 screen grabs from it. And I was like, so maybe a little bit of a pro tip you can use for people out there if you can't choose. That's an easy way of not having to choose. This year, our graphic designer and photographer also traveled with us, so it was easy. Like, anytime I was shooting, she was shooting, so we had both. So we didn't have to choose. We always like had something that we can utilize. And it was good because I also was able to get a cinema camera this year, so I wasn't able to take photos anyway. So I was just really excited that she was able to come with us this year.
What do you prefer better? Or is there a difference between how you cover games on the road versus how you cover games at home? And is there a preference between the two?
I think what I prefer, either shooting at home or on the road, is probably at home, because I have a lot more resources that I can utilize when we're at home, meaning more shooters that can help me grab different angles. And it's just comfortability. Like, I can move around the way I want to, and I like know the area. I don't get stopped by our security, like anything like that. And I can get the shots that I want. And again, I know where I'm going. But I don't say, that doesn't say I don't like shooting on the road. I think there are some pros to shooting on the road. It challenges me because I can't move as freely as I want unless I push the envelope. There's some places where I can push it a little bit and I just go wherever. I just usually watch the other videographers and I can talk to them too and just like ask. But as long as I'm like in the area that's close to my team, I feel like I can do that and I have my credential. I kind of fill it out to see if I can like go on the stands and like get some footage from up top or things like that. But I do enjoy like going to the different arenas and like, you know, seeing that and see what kind of lighting they have. So yeah, I like shooting at home just because of like, I'm just comfortable to do that here. And I know how to move and get the shots that I want. And again, like we only travel with myself, like one videographer and one photographer. So it's hard to get all the angles that I want if I don't want to miss shots. And the way that video is going, you want that cinematic like reel or cinematic highlight. And sometimes like just having one angle doesn't pull people's eyes as much. So you have to figure out how to either fake all the angles or be willing to risk missing shots because you're trying to like move to get somewhere else. And that's like the only like really cons that I have at being on the road. Sometimes you just go on the road and you just go to some like really good just like environments. Like when we went to Oregon last year, like that was such a good game for us. And but it was also just a really great crowd just to be in it. Or when we go to SC, their DJ is like the best DJ I've ever heard. Like he's hilarious. Love it. Like just like the different quirks I think are interesting. But like I love like our rival with Stanford, like going to Stanford, going across the bridge to go there and see their fan base. And this year, past year, was the first time that in a couple of years that Stanford came to Cal to play. And like that atmosphere, never seen that. That was great. Just to see just how many people just came to just support like that rival in that game. It was great. And it also helps that like, man, we were that close to beating them 4 points, but it was such a great environment. So I think I like being at home, but that doesn't say I don't like going on the road.
Right. Let's talk a couple tips, right?
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned it being on the road and having to kind of pick your spots and all that. How much of the focus has to be on actual game? And how much of it has to be on like just the feel of the game when you're filming these games, whether it's home or away? Like how much are you putting an emphasis on getting the buckets, all the buckets, and how much of it is the atmosphere and feel during the game?
I think for me, it depends on who you work for and what your coach wants. My coach wants me to get everything. So, and when I mean everything, I mean on the court, like I focus a lot like on trying to get every shot. That's why I think I say I like being at home because I can have people to help me capture the atmosphere, because I know like as a videographer, an editor, cinematographer, whatever you want to call me, like I think that I know like in a recap or whatever video I'm trying to create, you want to create a feel, you want to create an atmosphere, you want to create a mini movie that people can watch and say like, I may not be in the arena when that game happened, but after watching this video, I felt like I was there. You know, you get all the feels. So it's a hard balance for me because, again, when I'm on the road, I can't get all that. Like, it's really hard for me because I need to get every bucket, like, because the type of content that, you know, my coach wants me to make, like, includes that. Like I have to get those things, because if I don't, and then she asked me, did you get that bucket, and I'm like, nope, I was walking around trying to get some other stuff, and then like missed that opportunity. So like me as the main shooter, I try to focus on, you know, the game itself. And anytime I have help, I tell them the first thing I say, I need fan reactions, I need atmosphere type shots, I need, can you go outside and give me some detailed shots, like some establishing shots, like something to help make this video a little bit better? And then if it's just me, I kind of like, I don't know what I do. Like, I think whenever, every time I like go in the stands to get that bird's eye view of the play, if there is like a break, I would try to get like fan shots and different things like that. I know we're going to talk about this later, but working with the NCAA and doing video for them has taught me a lot, because it taught me how to kind of focus on all the different things. And the people that I work with, I learned so much from them that I think I'll be able to take into the next season.
With that being said, when you're on the road, how much of it is not trying to show too much of their great atmosphere or how much of it is not trying to help them recruit versus showing that, oh, this is just a great game in general?
I focus on our bench and our players and their celebrations and their emotion. And I try to focus on Cal's emotion. And most of the time, like, we have fans that there. And I tried so hard to capture them first. If there was like an upsetting like play, like say one of our players like did something, like blocked another player's shot, and then it pans over to like an opponent's fan base like throwing their hands up or something like that, or just like showing some type of emotion to that, I think that that's a way that I would do that. But mostly it's just, okay, how can I show the emotion of Cal? Like, can I pan it to the coach? Can I pan it to, or can I zoom in to the person that hit that three? And can I follow them and find what their reactions are? Or do we have fans there? Where are they? Make sure I know where our fans are so I can go to, so I can always pan to them and be like, okay, they have the flags. Let me, you know, just going crazy. Things like that is what I would do to help us, I think, is how I would not try to show their atmosphere. But sometimes it is good to show Pac-12's atmosphere, because that is recruiting for us as well, because we can show recruits that not only you're coming to our games where we got like fans cheering for you, but any arena that you go to, you're playing in an atmosphere that's crazy, that goes crazy for women's basketball. So it's a balance, but I think it's always good to show off your conference, because I still think that is that is a recruiting tool you can use, but you gotta kind of use it sparingly. But you want to show like, oh, anytime I go to Arizona, you're gonna go to a Pac. Yeah, you're gonna play in front of people. Every time you go to Stanford, you're gonna play, you know, in front of all these people. Anytime you go to Cal, you're gonna play in front of a lot of people. We want to show that every gym that we go to in conference is gonna be Pac. So you want to show that,
right? And you actually posted about this probably right before the tournament started, about how good the Pac-12 was in women's basketball. Mm-hmm. Talk about that. I mean, we've seen on ESPN and all of the media outlets how great the SEC is, how great the ACC is, how great the Big Ten is. And, you know, they have individual players that they are, you know, pushing. But the Pac-12, and in some ways, in many of your sports in the Pac-12, because you are 2 to 3 hours behind everyone else. But how good is the Pac-12, and what should people know about your conference that they may not know for women's basketball?
Yeah, day in and day out, each game is a gauntlet. Like, each game is important, like in every conference. But if you look at it from Cal's perspective, I would think that we had one of the toughest schedules in the country. And I say that because each game we played a ranked school. Like, in the teams that weren't ranked, we played once. And then the teams that were ranked, we played twice. So it's every single game you have to, like, to fight. Don't matter if you're the number two team in the country in Stanford, or you're the number 12 team in the Pac-12. In ASU, like, it doesn't matter. Like, each team had their run at a ranked school, and it was always a tough game. Like, you know, like, it's just always hard. Like, it's always hard to play every single game. And I mean, I haven't played or haven't done anything like in the SEC or any other conferences. I only could speak for the Pac-12. I just think, like, every single game was just difficult. Like, it was hard. And I say that for every team, not just the teams that were in the bottom of the pack. It's from top to bottom. It was difficult. And yes, like, you know, every conference has that. But I just think, like, Pac-12, like, women's basketball is special in that, just because you just have to bring it. Like, every team has to bring it, every player. You can be a Haley Jones, or you can be anybody, a lesser-known person, I guess, and you still have a tough time because you're playing against some just really great players top to bottom. And unfortunately, like, that didn't show as much in the tournament. But, you know, we didn't have, like, a Pac-12 team, like, in the Final Four. But we had them in the tournament. And I think that probably any team can go, like, that still was a tough game that we played. So it's hard. I think it's just hard to play day in and day out in the Pac-12. And I can only speak for Cal, just knowing that we had a really tough schedule playing UCLA, playing Stanford, playing Oregon, playing Arizona, playing Utah, playing Colorado, like, you know.
USC.
USC. It's hard. And then, like, I'm not even going to say, like, Oregon State, Arizona State, like, they were tough to play. Like, any win you come by is hard. It was hard to get that win. It's very hard to win.
With that in mind, obviously, we kind of talked about it at the top of the show. The women's basketball tournament. Two questions in one. How good is – what is the state of women's basketball for college? And talk about your experience working the tournament, especially the last few rounds of the basketball tournament.
So the state of women's basketball, in my humble opinion, is that it's on, like, this was the year of women's basketball, I think. Like, I think, like, this year, like, if you can think of it as a hump, like, women's basketball is trying to get over a hump. I think that this was the hump that we had to get over for it to just be like, oh, my God, like, the dam just broke type of thing. So I think, like, seeing the Final Four and the championship game and seeing the amount of support that we got in that sport, just shows how incredible, like, women's basketball is. And also just the fan, like they said, if you build it, people will come. Like, that's what we've been doing, is trying to set the table for people to just, like, have a seat and just enjoy, you know. And I think that this was, like, the showcase of it. And if people are not paying attention, weren't paying attention, they are now. They have to be. Like, 9 million people watching, like, the championship game is crazy. But it's not too crazy to think that it can never happen, you know. So I think the state of women's basketball is just, like, it's going to continue to grow. But we're over that hump. Now, like, it's just the sky's the limit. Like, I think it's just hopeful that the people that are the execs or the higher ups that keep the momentum going and not just keep it stagnant, but just, like, keep it going. Like, I'm hopeful that the players that we have in the game right now, that they'll keep being them and keep doing them. Like, you know, don't change because media is saying, like, you shouldn't do this, or you can't do this because she's doing that, or she's doing that, you can't do this. And I think that these players just need to be them and keep speaking up and keep playing and balling out like they are, because, you know, talent is going to speak for themselves. I think women's basketball is just in a super good spot. At least college basketball is in a really great spot. And then my experience at the NCAA, I worked on the digital and social team, and I was basically on the video team of that team. And I was able to not only capture, like, the Final Four and the Natty, like, being able to capture those moments that you see, like, on social media, but also just, like, the behind the scene work. So, like, the arrivals, like, being able to capture the arrivals and creating content for that. They had a salute or a gala, like, they had where they had all the divisions, and being able to be in that space and capture that and show that, the interactions between all the divisions. And then they call it a car wash or a media day, meaning, like, creating that content that you saw, like, on the video board, where you just have, like, the glamour shots with them, like, slow motion, dribbling the ball, like, everyone knows media day type shots, action shots. And all the way to being able to sit baseline and just, like, capture, like, Caitlin just going off against South Carolina and just, like, hitting three after three. Or, you know, capturing, like, Andrew Reese doing her thing. or Carson just like going off in the national championship. Like, I would probably say like one of my best shots I ever got was like one of Carson just like hitting a three and just like just running back and just like celebrating. It's so much fun just to like, it's fun to be able to be that person to actually hit that three and stuff, but it's also super fun just to like capture the joy that they have on their face just after they do that. And then I've never been a part of like any kind of national championship celebration. So to be able to like be in that confetti shower and create like just lasting moments for these players to remember, like, man, I was in that moment. That was like a highlight for me. It's just, I think I got a really good clip of like Carson just like kind of like looking, and it's just like a whole bunch of confetti just falling on her face, and just like being able to capture that moment. Like, hopefully like she sees it and she's like, oh my gosh, I can't believe like I'm there, or I was there. Just makes me really happy.
It was interesting to see. I saw an image of the LSU players' phones all lined up for someone on their team who was helping them capture and prepare for like the celebrations and everything going on.
Yeah.
And that's not an image that I think we would have seen, maybe not last year, but definitely not the year before.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious what you've seen on how NIL has changed or the athletes' own social media channels and the power that those have, how much that has changed from your perspective over the last year or two.
Yeah, I think what has changed is like the athletes are not necessarily reliant on the programs to showcase who they are as much, especially like, yeah, like if you have a program that has a million followers or whatever, like, yeah, the athlete wants you to post on the program's site because they're getting, you know, traffic. But I think like they have a lot more power to put, like, if they have a following that they can post their stuff, and they're asking for content more, like saying like, I have players ask me like, Key, can you make me a highlight reel real quick and I can post it on my social? Or Karen, who's our graphic designer, like, do you have a couple photos that I can grab? And, you know, we use influencer, like, we say, yeah, we'll put it on influencer, like, you can, you know, grab it from there. So they have a little bit more empowered, like, to ask for those things, and they're not like waiting for us to post. And then I don't know if Instagram or Twitter has like thought about this, like from the sports side, but them being able to use like the collab feature, I feel like has like helped us out a little bit, because now you can use both platforms to kind of like talk to each audience. I think it's really cool. I think that that has helped with sports in general, just being able to kind of share the likes and share the traffic, and it reach a larger amount of people. So I think that helps out with that. But I think just players just want content, and they want to own their own brand. They don't want to say that, like, I'm just a part of the Cal women's basketball brand. They're like, I want to be a part of Kiara Cooper's brand. Like, that's my brand, and I want to build that up. And they know how important it is for them to have their story told. So, especially on the women's basketball side, because media is not really telling everyone's story. And that's, for me, in my opinion, it's hindering them to get looks from, like, you know, going pro and stuff like that. Being able to tell their stories and people saying like, oh, you have a nod for National Player of the Year, but I don't know who you are, so I'm not gonna vote for you. You know, things like that is like, on the men's side, it's easy because people know who people are. So I think that you can see that with Aaliyah Boston, like on Together on their account, she made her own little mini doc or whatever. And I was like, that's so cool. You shouldn't have to do that for yourself, but that's cool that you're taking that leap to own your own brand. And you like to make videos, and you're going to do that for yourself, and people putting it on their platform, I think that's cool. And then you got like YouTube, where they're able to do like the day in the lives and all that stuff. So I think it's more empowering for these students to like own their own brand and being able to tell their own stories. I think is super important, and that, you know, programs are not hoarding their, you know, their image, likeness, name, image and likeness type of thing. Like, no, let us post first. And like we can, like, that's them. We can give it to them. We can give them photos to them. We can give them videos, and we can also post our own content as well.
So when you say that they're grabbing the content from you, do you think that the athletes are more capable today of creating their own content? That kind of sounded like what I was hearing. I just wanted to hear your perspective on how they're able to create content and the resources that they have at their disposal and the want to be able to do it to create something compelling.
I think they can create content that has to do with like their personal brand in the sense of, I'm gonna do like a vlog, or I'm gonna do like, I'm gonna take phone photos or think, but they can't, they're not able to like capture themselves playing basketball or capture themselves, you know? So it's like, they come to me for like that stuff. Or if they don't, if they think I can make really cool videos and maybe they aren't capable of doing that, they probably rather, instead of learning how to do it, they probably are like, we have an editor, so can you make it for me? Which I'm more than happy to do that, because that's what I'm like, that's my job and that's what I like to do. So it just depends on them. Mostly, I would say most athletes, they would probably just go to their content creator and then ask them like, hey, can you help us out with this? Because they're focused on other things. Like, they shouldn't be focusing on, let me make this video real quick. Like, if they're playing, they should focus on playing. And if there's people there to help them, utilize that help, those resources. And that, I think that teaches them in the future too, is like, utilize the resources that you have, you know, it's that adage of work smarter, not harder type of thing. So if you have people that can help you to create, use that, because maybe 4 years from now, you may not have that and you may have to like, quote unquote, pay for it. You know what I'm saying? So I think that they can make their own content in the sense of like, if they want to do the YouTube thing and their videos, for sure. But I also think like most athletes understand that, oh, we have content creators that are here to help our brand and stuff like that. So why not utilize that? Because that's what we're here for.
How much are you talking to them outside of the day-to-day Cal brand, mm-hmm. of how they can build themselves and their brands away from the school and the sport? And you talked about the vlogs, and a lot of what I've seen is like the Get Ready With Me for mm-hmm. the female athlete, which has nothing to do with them as an athlete, but it also has something to do with, hey, I'm this person, this is what I'm interested in away from the game. How much is that conversation happening from you to them?
Yeah, it depends on the athletes. Most of them, like, they probably like have their own like people they talk to, or they're like really good at it themselves. But I have a couple of like athletes that'll probably come and ask like questions about like, hey, I'm thinking about doing this podcast, like, you know, like, either can you help me do it, or like, what should I do, or things like that. And I'm like, well, I'm not a pro in podcasting or vlogging or anything like that, but I can help you with logistics. Or they'll ask like camera, like, what type of camera should I use, things like that. And then I try to like sneak in saying like doing that little media training that like I learned as an SID. It's just like, okay, like, just make sure that these are the do's and don'ts that you shouldn't do, that helps, that probably doesn't help your brand, nor does it help the Cal brand. Like, you have to understand that you represent two brands. You represent yourself and the program that you're a part of. So just making sure that you like have that conversation. I don't really do a lot of like branding or NIL like education. I think we have people on staff for that, and they're probably a lot more knowledgeable than I am. But when it comes to the content creation, like, I can help them with any type of ideas that they want to do, or just like how to go about it. We can like kind of brainstorm if they want to do a YouTube channel. Okay, let's brainstorm how you do it. First, you need to go like talk to compliance or our NIL person to make sure like, okay, all your ducks in a row with that. And then you come to me and ask like, okay, like, what type of camera should I use for this vlog? Or I wanted to do photography. What type of camera should I do for photography? Can you help me make this this graphic? But don't make it, but show me like how you make this graphic so I can do it you know, by myself later? Or are there tutorials or things like that? It's just giving them the resources for them to succeed on their own. I think like that's the best way to teach someone, is not to like obviously do it themselves and then say, okay, this is how you do it. It's more so of, here are the resources, this is how I do it, but here are the resources. And it's almost like, figure out how you learn best and do it that way, rather than saying, well, I'm gonna go in and just do it for you type of thing.
So as far as lessons that you've learned in sports and where you are today, do you have any advice, good advice, not bad advice, for people who maybe want to follow in your footsteps?
Don't let other people's limitations limit you, if that makes sense. I think that's what happened to me when I got that bad advice, and I've had several that's similar to that, is like, the reason that someone's telling you that you can't do this is because they already reached their limit and they can't, you know, do it. Don't let their limitations limit you, because their limitations are not your limitations. Yes, like, listen to it and then like take it and reflect on it, but reflect on it to the point is like, is that their limitation or is that my limitation? That will make your road a lot longer than it needs to be. And also, like, your road is not similar to everyone else's. Like, if you saw my road to where I'm at, not many people took my route. I feel like my route is fairly unique. So you don't have to work at a D1 to be at a D1. I'm speaking to people that either the D3 athlete, work in D3, trying to break into D1, is difficult, is hard, but don't let someone tell you that you can't do it, because that's what happened to me. Someone told me that, you're in D3, you're never going to work in D1. You're never going to work at Power 5. You're never going to do that. And I took that to heart. I'm like, well, I guess I'm never going to get there. But you can't listen to that. You have to just, you got to push through, and you got to connect, and you got to network, and you got to talk to people and create relationships. For me, networking is not just finding people to help me get a job. It's finding people that I can call friends in the industry, that if they can help me get a job, cool. If they can't, cool. At least I have a friend in the industry that I can, you know, talk to and stuff like that. So I think, like, for me, it's just, don't let other people's limitations limit you. Don't, I think Kobe said this best, like, just like block it all out and just like grind to the point where you feel comfortable, and to get where you're at, put your head down and just like go. Just block all the haters out, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. And do you, and just keep working and keep sharpening on your craft, because that's what's going to get you to your end destination. And I guess like another good tip is just like, enjoy the process, because the process is really where that joy comes from. It's not necessarily the end result. So enjoy like all the things that's going to help you get there, because that's where you're going to create the most relationships, create the best work, and learn the most. So
personally and professionally, the next few years, 5 years, however long, what would you like to see improve and more advancement in this field?
I would like creatives to get more recognition in the work that they do that helps build programs. I think that creatives are a very integral part of programs and in recruiting. And like, I think that creatives are storytellers, and you're not going to get a recruit if you're not telling the story of your program. You're not going to advance your program without telling your story. We keep talking about brands, we keep talking about storytelling, and the people that are doing the storytelling, that are heavily impacting storytelling, are the people that you hire to be creatives on your team. And I think that recognition needs to happen like at a more exponentially like level. And I think like the respect needs to be there. And I think that I think the compensation needs to be there. I think that and I think that the workflow, and when I say workflow, I just mean like not grinding someone to the point of like exhaustion. And I think that comes with resources and hiring people to do their jobs, and not hiring one person to do all the jobs, if that makes sense. So it's just finding that balance and like I want creatives to be just as important as the coaches are, because I feel like coaches are telling their stories verbally, and I think your creatives are visually telling your stories. And if we continue to say content is king, and we need content, like, we need to be able to give the resources to the people who are creating that content. And I think that it needs to be a shift change a little bit, and just respect, I guess. Like, you know, the LSU girls were like, put some respect on our name. And I'm say the same thing for creatives. Like, the stuff that we all push out day in and day out is great work. And that work most of the time is getting you the things that you need and want when it comes to marketing, when it comes to brand, when it comes to recruiting, when it comes to in-game entertainment, all that stuff. So just being like, sometimes creative just wants you to recognize them and say, like, you did that, like, good job, like, thank you. And I think, like, it starts with that, but it doesn't end with that, I guess is what I'm trying to say. It starts with the recognition and a thank you. It ends with, like, a little bit more, you know, you got to get a bag for that. Like, you made that dope, like, recap, and now it's on Apple, it's on ESPN, it's on this, it's on that. Like, how can we help these creatives have a lifestyle where they're not just grinding so much and eating ramen or whatever, you know, penny pinching and all that stuff? Like, if they're getting millions and millions of views on content, like, you know, we have to have something to show for that.
How do you think we get there? And the second part to that is, how do you balance it for the creatives to get more recognition, to get more compensation with, do you think that would balance the drastic changing in moving around the industry for a lot of people? Are they bouncing around for compensation? Are they bouncing around for recognition?
That's a hard one. Like, I don't, like, how do you get there? I think it's just someone advocating and advocating for more resources. I think, like, how do you get to someone not being worked down to the bone to the point of leaving? It's like, I think it's like having someone just say, like, we need more resources. You say that for, like, we need to have chartered planes everywhere. It's like, okay, which, yeah, we should, maybe, like, in pros and stuff like that. But, like, if you want content that's supposed to look 4K and, like, you know, be good enough to be on an ESPN commercial, then get the equipment that needs for that to happen. Stop, like, you know, asking people to finesse thing. I hate when people ask me, can you finesse this? Like, no, like, I don't know what that means. Like, finesse what? Like, there's only so much I can do. And then I agree with, like, you know, it's not about the equipment, it's about the person that's using the equipment. But sometimes too, like, you only can push your equipment so far to do stuff. So it's just like having those resources, having the people in the right spots to do things. Like, knowing that I'm not a motion graphic designer, that's a completely different skill set than what I have, and understanding that. And now I'm not trying to spend all this time trying to figure out how to make a motion graphic, because I have no clue how to do that. But I can make you a sick, like, recap, or I can make you a sick, like, you know, I can edit and make and tell you the story if something happens, and, like, it's completely different. I'm not an animator. I'm not going to animate anything for you. Like, just the things like that, or giving that, if you're asking that person to do something, give them the resources where they can learn how to do that. If you're asking me to be a sound design or sound mixer, then give me some resources where I can go learn that, and give me the time to go learn that, rather than asking me, like, right then to be like, hey, can you make this motion graphic, like, and make it in, like, 3 hours? No, it's not going to happen. It's going to take me about a couple of weeks, because I got to figure out how to do it. Like, some of the best, like, motion and graphic designer that I've seen on social, and they put out some fire stuff, right? And then you ask them, how long does it take you? Oh, it took me about 2 weeks.
You make a good point. So, about the resources and getting people what they need, do you think that issue may, with having a solid plan of how to get from problem to solution, do you think that would help? Like, if I know a lot of times I work with a lot of coaches where they want things today, but then tomorrow their mind changes, and so you can't make a drastic shift. But some things you can plan ahead, like, hey, if I had this camera, I could do photo, video, you know, a mix, a hybrid, If I had this laptop, I could do X, Y, and Z. Hiring is a little different because that's a bigger, I mean, even if you made $40,000 a year, that's, it costs more than $40,000 to hire somebody, to hire them plus the benefits plus, right? So have you thought about, or what are some things that creatives could do to help themselves get that help and not just, hey, I'm burnt out and doing all this. So where is that kind of happy medium?
Yeah, that's also a really good point. I feel like it is like trying to work with other people to like figure out like how we can make things a little bit better for creatives. And I think like one thing that I try to do is like trying to teach myself different like little things. So I am like a jack of all trades and a type of things, but also like I don't want to be like a master of many and a master of none, but maybe like a master of what I am doing, but like I know little pieces of different things. But I think like what creatives can help themselves is like being good at like knowing what you need and want in order to get the job done, and then like having like, instead of like going and saying like, well, we need this, but having like a backup plan or a solution to be like, well, if you're asking me to be a motion designer but I can't motion design, I have this friend who is a motion designer, can we use them for a couple of things, you know, just like helping each other out that way. And then just like, you may not be able to hire on another motion or graphic designer, but can we use a freelance or help somebody out? Or like, you know, maybe there's like a student that we can use and like, can we bring them on? And maybe we can't pay them like a full-time salary, but how can we help them so that we're not just using their time for free, you know, and just abusing that? But like, how can we like help them? Maybe it's like for credit, or maybe it is like giving them like work study like hours or like something that helps them. And then making sure that we're always like giving those students, like if they're doing a good job, like good recs, and like helping them get to the spots they want to get to and things like that. But I think like creatives can help themselves of like you said, planning, knowing what you need and what you want to get the job done, and then like being able to go to your boss and say, okay, you want me to do this, but remember like we bought this for this, or like just like having your ducks in a row type of thing. And then like all leaders say, like, have a solution for me if you know you come for me with a problem, have a solution type of thing. And I know like some of us probably hate hearing that, but it actually works and it helps just to be able to say like, well, you want us to make this PowerPoint presentation, but we can't do all this work, but I have a solution. Can we use this group of people that can help us create all this stuff at a decent price? And then we have it. And then now like we can utilize like that for other stuff too. So it's like, it helps us in the long end. It future-proofs ourselves, right? So it's just like that idea of like, you come with a problem, have a solution. Don't expect your boss to like have all the answers, because they probably won't, or they'll probably shut you down. So,
Kiara, thank you for joining us on today's episode. It was great to hear about your journey from a D3 hooper to an assistant coach to SID/content creator to now a full-time content creator. You do amazing work. You are a talented being and an advocate for not only yourself and women's basketball, but other creatives as well. So please continue to do that, and please continue to just keep being dope and awesome and doing great stuff and whatever you decide to do in life.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, it was really fun, so I appreciate it. Yeah, I love this podcast, so I'm glad I got to be a part of it.
Well, thank you so much for making Creative Sports Podcast part of your day. We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions, so pop on over to the Sports Creative Community on Slack and connect with us and your fellow creatives. If you're enjoying this podcast, we'd love it if you shared it with a friend or a coworker, and leave us a 5-star rating so other people will be able to find us as well. And don't forget to subscribe so that you're the first person to catch each new episode. Remember, the world needs your voice, so keep creating.